This week we've been having a series of conversations about Iraq, the rise of ISIS, and whether the U.S. should be more or less involved in the fight. On Monday, we heard from retired Army Colonel Andrew Bacevich, who cautioned against further U.S. military involvement.
I'd say that the reason ISIS exists is because the George W. Bush administration introduced U.S. forces into Iraq in the first place.
Yesterday, we heard from Elliot Abrams, former Deputy National Security Advisor to President George W. Bush, who said the U.S. should be more aggressive.
I think the developments of the last 6 years are not the responsibility of President Bush. They are the responsibility of the president in power now.
Today, we turn to former war correspondent Rajiv Chandrasekaran, author of Imperial Life in the Emerald City, Inside Iraq's Green Zone. Rajiv, welcome back.
Great to be on with you, Jeremy.
And as you look at the U.S. fight against ISIS in Iraq right now, what do you see?
I see a fight that has its roots in failures and miscalculations that were made back in 2003. When we look at why the Sunni Arab population across northern, central, and western Iraq seem to be casting their lot with ISIS as opposed to the central government. When we ask ourselves, why isn't the Iraqi army doing a better job in fighting? Why aren't the political leaders in Baghdad coming together to forge the necessary political compromises to stabilize their country? I go back to the very earliest months after U.S. forces and U.S. civilian leaders descended upon Baghdad in the spring and summer of 2003, and some of the fateful original sins of our early occupation of that country, the decision to disband the Iraqi army, to ban many mid-level members of the Ba'ath Party from ever participating in political life again, moves that had a disproportionate impact on the Sunni Arab population, sending many of them essentially into the arms of the nascent insurgency, telling them that they really didn't have a future in the grand experiment that was going to be the new Iraq. And you had a disenfranchised, disaffected population that never really came back into the fold.
And you're saying that those people went and became part of ISIS, or that they simply didn't want to help keep Iraq together in fighting ISIS?
It's more the latter, but I see a direct line from the past to the present in that all of the steps that would then be taken by the Americans, by Iraqi governments that would follow to try to win them back over were too little too late. And I'm not trying to suggest that all of them went to go fight for ISIS, but many of them have essentially acquiesced to ISIS because they see ISIS as evil, as vicious as that group is. They see it as less bad than the Shiite-dominated central government in Baghdad.
And when you point to the mistakes that happened early on in 2003, was there anything that the Obama administration could have done better in their withdrawal that would have stopped ISIS from getting to the point where they are now?
You know, I think there was more that could have been done to continue to engage the Iraqi government, to push the government of then Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to actually make some necessary concessions and share power in a more meaningful way with the Sunni Arabs. If you'll recall, back in 2007 and 2008, U.S. forces had some pretty good success in enlisting Sunni Arab tribesmen to fight against al-Qaeda in Iraq. And they were paid for and armed by U.S. forces, and they fought alongside, in some cases, American troops. And when U.S. forces started to pull back, we asked Prime Minister Maliki to continue to pay them, to bring them on to the Iraqi security forces' payroll and to give them uniforms and to essentially embrace them for what they had done. Instead, Maliki and his administration set about to just sort of cast them aside, stopped paying them, and just kind of neglected them. And so these were then people who, after some years of feeling like they had no future in the country, were ripe pickings for ISIS. You know, ISIS isn't stupid. They looked and they saw a soft underbelly. They saw potential recruits. They saw places they could go into with relatively little opposition. And so they surged into those places.
So how much of an interest do you think the United States has at this point in stopping them?
Look, insofar as some of these dusty villages in western Iraq are concerned, that they are in the control of ISIS as opposed to the central government in Iraq, it probably doesn't pose a direct threat to the United States and our allies. But here's the big issue. ISIS as a whole in Syria, in Iraq, has recruited in about 20,000 foreign fighters from more than 80 different countries. And many of those foreign fighters will probably wind up dead. Others may go home and discover that what they did was pretty bad and try to get back on the straight and narrow. But in the most conservative of estimates, you'll have many, many hundreds of those individuals going back to their home countries, not just to the United States and Western Europe, but across Africa, other parts of the Middle East. And many of them may well seek to continue their violent struggle, but back at home. So the threat, the ISIS problem, is in some ways less of a what's the future of Iraq, but what does this group pose in terms of a long-term threat to the rest of the world?
We're speaking with Rajiv Chandrasekharan, a former war correspondent for The Washington Post, who's written a book about life inside the Green Zone in Baghdad and about what happened in Iraq in the early days of the war there. And Rajiv, I want to pick up on what you were just saying. Does it follow, if ISIS poses a threat to countries around the world because of terrorists who are either homegrown or go over to the Middle East to train and then come back and launch attacks in the West, does it follow that in order to counter that, the U.S. needs to be sending more military to fight them there in Iraq, in your view?
Well, it does follow that more probably needs to be done against ISIS. That doesn't necessarily need to mean legions of U.S. troops descending upon Iraq. The trick is, how do you get the Iraqis to more meaningfully stand up and fight? And I think herein, the United States needs to do a couple of things differently. There probably do need to be a few more troops on the ground. But it's not just the numbers. It's what those forces are doing. And they need to be getting out of their bases and headquarters locations and actually getting out further into the field with Iraqi forces so they can more meaningfully employ U.S. airstrikes to go after ISIS columns and other ISIS targets. But we also need to be ramping up the diplomatic pressure on Baghdad. And the Iraqi government needs to demonstrate in a more meaningful way to all parts of Iraqi society, particularly the Sunni Arab population, that they have a place in the future country. And if you are in parts of the country now that are controlled by ISIS and you're able to receive news from Baghdad, you're still not getting the message that you're really a part of the future of that country.
What would you think if we were to pull out completely? Just say, you know what, this is not our problem. We may have contributed to it, but by keeping U.S. troops there, we're not making things any better, and we're putting our own soldiers at risk.
Well, this isn't going to be a very popular answer, but if we were to do that, we would cede what little influence we have entirely over to Iran. And the Iranian regime and the Iranian Revolutionary Guards would consolidate their influence over Baghdad and over the parts of the country where they already have a lot of sway in the southern part of Iraq. And you would essentially have a two-front proxy war. And by Iran consolidating its power, you may well lead other Sunni Arab states who are concerned about Iranian hegemony, namely Saudi Arabia, to soften in their opposition to ISIS, because while ISIS does pose a threat to the government in Riyadh and the governments in Amman, Jordan, and elsewhere, the perceived threat from the Iranians is even greater to the Saudis and others.
How much does Iraq matter today in 2015?
I think it still matters an awful lot. It sits in a very strategic location in the Middle East. It's essentially a buffer state between Shiite Persian Iran and the Sunni Arab monarchies of the Persian Gulf. It has a lot of oil under its sand. but it also is a multi-ethnic, multi-sectarian country. Of course, that's been a source of a lot of the tension, but it is a society that could represent the future of a more pluralistic Middle East. It's the sort of place that I think it is in our interest to show that people from different backgrounds can actually live in harmony side by side. They did so for many, many years in that country, and we helped break that country. Saddam did a lot of breaking too, but we did our part, and we have an obligation to help the Iraqis come together again and try to realize their hopes of living in a more stable society.
Rajiv Chandrasekaran, former war correspondent for The Washington Post. His book is called Imperial Life in the Emerald City, Inside Iraq's Green Zone. Rajiv, thank you so much.
Great to talk to you, Jeremy.